Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Willkommen to Forever 35, a podcast about the things we do to take care of ourselves. I'm Kate Spencer.
Wow. You are really giving this podcast an international flair.
I just was like, how can I spice this up top?
Well, you spiced it up.
And surprise Dory, who, that's you.
I'm Dory Shafrir.
And we're not experts.
We are two friends who like to talk a lot about serums.
We're also
Auf Deutsch.
Did you take German?
Yeah.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
I don't know. I know that's the only, Willkommen's maybe the only German word I know.
I mean, I have not retained very much.
In high school you took German?
No, I took it in grad school.
Oh my goodness. Why?
Because I was a European history
person.
I spent 2 summers in Germany.
Did you really?
Yeah.
So if we go do a live podcast in Germany,
it won't all come flooding back to me.
But
German is a very difficult language.
I know none of it.
And I had taken French my whole life, so I was in I had romance languages kind of in my brain. Mm-hmm. And German is just a whole other kettle of fish.
Well, could you at least navigate me around German food? Tell me what to eat?
Probably.
Oh, that sounds good.
Yeah.
Okay.
A nice Wurst.
Is that a bratwurst?
Yeah, like a sausage.
I'm into this.
Or a doner kebab.
What's that? That also sounds like a sausage.
It's Turkish. It's like a sandwich.
Yum.
A kebab sandwich.
I'm excited for this German live podcast that we're gonna do.
we could do it in Berlin.
I have this fantasy podcast tour that I keep in my head where we just travel the world doing this podcast.
Let's manifest that.
I mean, let's manifest it for when your child's a toddler, at least.
What child?
Well, we're really yucking it up top. Hey, everybody.
Hey.
Welcome to the show. Dory.
Yes.
It's great to see you.
Likewise.
You texted me some baby updates yesterday.
I did.
That you might want to share with the audience.
So I went to the doctor yesterday, and when she went to find his heartbeat, she went to find it in the place where she normally finds it. And then she was like, it's not there. And then she moved the little Doppler thing up, and she was like, oh, that's where it is. And she was like, the baby hasn't dropped. He's moved up.
He was like, wee, the other way, I want to go.
She was like, he's real comfy in there. And then she was also like, oh, we had just been talking about how we're getting a certified car seat person to install our car seat.
Look at you.
And she was like, yeah, you probably don't need to do that soon. But she was like, this baby's not coming early.
He snuggled and he found a good crevice.
Yeah, he's just really burrowed in there. And then she said, I won't let you go past 42 weeks, which I was shocked she even was going to let me go that far. She said, yeah, at 41 weeks, we'll start. Like, if you're still, if you haven't gone into labor by 41 weeks, we're going to start discussing, what's going to happen. One thing I really like about my doctor is, she doesn't age shame.
Right. Because you
And she's not like, you know, fear-mongery about me being older. So I appreciate that, because there are some doctors who will induce you at 39 weeks if you're over, like, definitely over 38, and I think now over 35.
Jeez Louise.
Yeah. So I appreciate that she's just like letting it happen. But yeah, he's in no rush, which, you know, I'm like fine with.
Yeah.
Like, I, you know, it's fine. At least we're sort of, we're like set up now.
Oh, your nursery looks adorable.
Oh, thank
it's
you.
It's so beautiful. I just love it.
Thank you
your
so much.
Your whole home, all the work you all have been doing and to get everything set up. It's all set up now.
It's all set up now. We have, now we have the car seat. We have the stroller. Like, we have all his accoutrements.
All you need is the baby.
All we need is the baby.
Are you getting to that, that point where you're like, I'm done with this? Like,
you know, I'm not actually. And I know that people get there, and I'm sure I will get there. I'm not quite there yet. But I am feeling like I'm slowing down, you know, like I just don't have the energy to do a lot of stuff.
Yeah. It's a lot of work.
Yeah.
Physically.
It's a lot of work. And like, I'm waking up every hour pretty much to pee. So that's just like, you know, I'm not getting great sleep, but like in the grand scheme of things, and I know I've said this before, like, I feel like the second 2/3 of my pregnancy have been pretty easy.
Sure.
And I'm very grateful for that. So I'm just sort of trying to roll with
ride
it.
Ride that wave.
Ride the wave. Also, I realized I forgot to mention this on the show, but I feel like I need to tell everyone. I pushed my book deadline.
I didn't know this until I saw it in our show notes.
Yeah. So, you know, originally we had a sort of aggressive deadline of August 1st.
Okay. Okay.
And I think especially in the last month, when I'm feeling calmer now, but I was sort of like in a state about getting stuff ready for the baby. Like,
I recall.
I just didn't have the mental space to think about the book or work on it that much. I worked on it a little bit, but not as much as I probably should have. And I started being like, oh shit, like August 1st is not that far away.
Well, especially when your time is going to be occupied with a new human.
Yeah. And so I asked, when we were like going back and forth on the contract, I asked my agent if we could push it. And she was like, what would a good date for you be? And I said, how about December 1st? So
you feel good about that?
I feel good about that.
Good.
It's taken like some stress off, and I feel like I'll have more time just kind of like
good.
Really get it to the place that I want to get it to.
Can't
so, yeah.
wait to read it.
Well, thanks.
If you need anyone to look at early drafts.
I mean, always, Kate.
God. I'm your gal.
You are.
I mean, I won't be offended if you reach
okay,
out to
but,
somebody
you know,
else.
There has to be some, well, no, I shouldn't say that. I was going to say there has to be some reciprocity, but I'm not going to put that on you. But I would like to read what
well,
you're working on.
I'm 33,000 words into a draft of something. Maybe 34,000.
That is so many thousands of words.
It's a lot of thousands. I went to a reading recently with some of my fave romance authors. Alicia Rye, I believe is how you pronounce her last name, Sally Thorne, and Christina Lauren. And it was very exciting. Like, I got there at the shout out to the Ripped Bodice, the an amazing bookstore here in Los Angeles that focuses on inclusive romance books and other, they have other great books. They're just fantastic. And it was just a really cool, it was actually, I'm sorry, it wasn't a reading. It was like an event. It was moderated. They talked about writing. And I've talked about especially a lot of these authors on the podcast, but Sally Thorne's book, The Hating Game, I've read like 50 times. I just, it's like Pride and Prejudice for me. I just like reread it over and over again.
Can you give us a brief overview of what it's about?
It's two employees at a company who are both vying for the same promotion. And after their companies have merged, and they're both kind of like executive assistants to the two heads of these merged, the two organizations that merged, and they hate each other, but do they really? And it's not even the premise is adorable, but what's really enticing is just the writing is so quick and catchy, and the character's voice is captured so perfectly. It's just lovely. I love it so much. It gives me heart palpitations of love every time I read it. Anyway,
I love a workplace romance.
You know, I do too. I do.
I don't too. Like them in real life.
They've you don't never... like a workplace romance in real life. No. Yeah. You and I have both not, that didn't work out for me either.
They've ended badly.
Yep. That was a weird one for me as well.
But in fiction, bring it on.
Totally. Not real characters.
Wait, what was that movie that came out last year on Netflix with Lucy Liu?
Oh, the two assistants.
You know what I'm talking about.
Uh-huh. And what's his face? Hot guy.
Yes. What's his
Rent.
Face? Hot
Why can't
guy.
I think of his name? Idina Menzel's ex-husband.
Taye Diggs.
Thank you.
Yes.
I can't remember the name of it.
I can't either. Lane, could you Google
Lane,
that?
Could you Google assistant movie Netflix?
Lucy Liu.
Zoe Deutsch.
What was it? Set It Up.
Set It Up.
Yes.
A great.
A fabulous.
Rom-com. Yes. Such a good rom-com. Mm-hmm.
I hope they make more of those.
Oh, me too.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I'm trying to write.
Yeah,
it's a rom-com. Good. But I will say, listening to these writers talk, one thing Sally Thorne said was like, you just have to show up, even if you're miserable, even if you hate what you're writing, you just have to sit and stare at the computer until a word comes out. And it really inspired me to keep going with this draft that I'm working on that I one day hope to be a thing. Even if it's not a thing that ever sees the light of day, I want it to be a thing I complete. That's my only goal with this, is to complete it. It doesn't have to be a book that I sell. But it's been really fun writing it. And I've set a hard deadline for myself to get this first draft done. And that deadline's coming up.
What is it?
Well, it's in approximately 14 days.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm writing about 1,000 words a day.
Wow.
So if I consistently write about 1,000 to 1,100 words for the next 14 days, I'll hit 50,000 words, which is my goal for this first draft.
Oh my gosh, amazing.
And it's there. It's coming along. It makes no sense. Everything, you know, if you've read Anne Lamott's shitty first drafts piece, which I believe is a chapter in Bird by Bird, a fantastic book on writing and the creative process. I just kind of keep repeating that in my head, like shitty first draft.
I need to repeat that in my head too.
It just is garbage, and that's okay.
Yeah.
At this event, at this mm-hmm. author event, a person tapped me. This lovely person, hello to you. And they said, are you Dory? And I was, and my response was so dumb. I just go, nope. Like, I could have been like, no, I'm her podcasting partner, Kate.
Wait, you just said no?
I just was like, no. And I smiled. And then I know this was not a good, my social anxiety was boiling out. And then this person was like, oh, are you Kate? I was like, yes. Why couldn't I have just introduced myself? I don't know. Listener, if you're listening, sorry. I was nervous. But they were very nice. And they said hi. They were also at this event. So, look. Call me Dory anytime you want. What if I had pretended to be you? What if I had been like, yes, it's me. It's me, Dory Shafrir, 37 weeks pregnant.
I'm wearing it well.
Yeah, it's just going in my legs. Well, Dory, shall we take a little pause?
Let's take a little break.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I think it's safe to say that we have suffered through bras. We've been uncomfortable in them. We've devoted whole episodes to finding good ones. But I'm here to say enough is enough. Enough. Enough.
I mean, drawn the line. Dory, have I ever told you what I did in college when I needed a bra to wear with a fancy dress?
What?
I cut the top of pantyhose and then I duct taped that to my chest.
Oh. Sounds uncomfortable.
Because I didn't have honey love when I was in college.
No. Well, we are here to say no more being uncomfortable. With Honey Love's bras, you will wonder why it took so long to make something so comfortable and so supportive. There's no underwire, but through some kind of wonderful magic, they managed to not sacrifice lift. All while making it in a fabric that's so comfortable, you barely know it's there, especially the crossover bra. I wear one of these almost every day. I'm wearing one right now because it's so comfortable and it easily fits into my life. But if you like a breathable and versatile legging, Honeylove has you covered on that front too. Plus, they have tanks, shapewear, and their V-bra that has molded cups still without the underwire to keep you from getting that dreaded uniboob effect other more relaxed bras tend to give you. So treat yourself to the best bras and shapewear on the market and save 20% off at honeylove.com/forever. Use our exclusive link to get 20% off, honeylove.com/forever. After your purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them, and please support our show and tell them we send you. Treat yourself to Honeylove because you deserve it.
You know, one thing I think is really kind of interesting about skin, my skin, but all skin, is that like what it needs now in my 40s is not what I needed in my 30s.
Totally.
Definitely not what I needed in my 20s. But like, how are you supposed to know what your skin needs?
It's hard. It's hard to know.
Especially when there's just like so many products out there. The overwhelm is real. It's a struggle to even know how to get the results you want, what products to start with. This is why we're super excited to partner with Apostrophe. Apostrophe is a prescription skincare company that offers science-backed medications that are clinically proven to help. I have used Apostrophe. I love it. They will pair you with a board-certified dermatologist who literally creates a personalized treatment plan for your skin. I have done this a few times now. It is so easy to do their online consultation. You upload photos. And like within a few weeks, I had done the consultation and received my treatment plan and my product.
Amazing.
And that is how I became a tretinoin gal. I love the tretinoin that they sent me. I love their sunscreen. Both products have been amazing on my skin. And you, Forever 35 listeners, can get a special deal from Apostrophe. You can get your first visit for only $5. That's at apostrophe.com/forever35 when you use our code forever35. Now, that is a savings of $15. I like that. This code is only available to Forever 35 listeners. So to get started, just go to apostrophe.com/forever35 and click get started. And then use our code forever35 at sign up and you will get your first visit for only $5. Thank you, Apostrophe, for sponsoring this episode.
So, Kate.
Yes.
We are discussing a topic that I think is very dear to, I know, dear to your heart.
Dear in a way that, meaning like, it's still a process for me.
It's still a journey. We wanted to talk about setting boundaries.
Because, boy, it's hard.
It is hard.
And I think it's an essential part of self-care.
Yes, right? For sure.
And, boy, it's a free part of self-care. Costs nothing.
Yes.
Doesn't cost, it's not a bottle of serum. It's a boundary. A boundary of serum? Nope. Not making sense.
A boundary serum.
A boundary serum, right? You laid out this boundary serum.
Mm-hmm.
This is not working.
No, all right.
All right. We tried. we've actually received a lot of listener questions and comments about boundary and a lot of like, how do I do it? And I think in my personal experience, it's a muscle you have to condition.
Yes.
Right?
For sure.
I imagine there are some people who it comes naturally and instinctively to, but for me, it's been something I've had to really work at and learn how to do in a way that makes me feel comfortable and honors my needs as a people pleaser.
Yeah. So how do you do that?
Well, for a long time, I did not set boundaries.
And what did that look like?
Give
us an example.
Well, part of my just who I am is that I'm very afraid of disappointing people. Mm-hmm. I don't like to let people down. I'm afraid I'll get in trouble if I disappoint. I mean, I don't know. You could psychoanalyze me until the cows come home. I'm not sure why that's who I am, but it is. So for me,
I'm disappointed.
Oh God, I gotta leave.
That is very disappointing to me.
Dory's joking, everybody. Don't worry.
JK, everyone. It's so fun to make fun of other people's anxieties.
I mean, sometimes it is. You have to laugh at yourself.
You do. Because what other options do we
have? You'd cry your eyes out if you didn't.
It's so true. Anyway, sorry to interrupt. Didn't mean to make light of your
That's okay. I actually think I just quoted banter from Indigo Girls 12,000 Curfews.
Oh,
you'd laugh at yourself. You'd cry your eyes out if you did. Is that okay? Wow, we're really I'm all over the place today. Anyway, I think the first lesson I really had in setting boundaries was when I was a caregiver for my mother, because it was the first time I felt empowered to say no. Meaning, like if someone emailed me to do stuff, or you know, it was the first time I felt like I could say like no. You know what? I have to protect myself. I'm in a lot of pain, or I'm struggling or whatever. I can't be, you know, I just can't say yes to everything.
What were people asking you to do?
It's not like anybody was, you know, like, Kate, do this chore, but it was more like, you know, I might not respond to an email on time.
Right.
You know, this kind of sense of obligation that I've always had, I was able to let go of it, or I said no to plans. Mm-hmm. You know, I was pretty depressed after my mom died, or even when she was sick, and I didn't feel like going out.
Yeah.
And just being really honest, because one thing I have done in the past is white lie, because I've been afraid of being honest with people, afraid they would be mad at me if I was honest. But also I had to learn to set boundaries as my mom's caregiver. So, you know, like for example, my mom was very private. She did not have a lot of visitors at the end of her life, or I know some people have, you know, everybody in to see them. She just didn't want that. She really wanted quiet.
Yeah.
And so I had to set boundaries for her.
Oh, interesting.
And that was very hard.
Yeah.
But that was a lesson I really got out of the experience of caregiving for my mother, was learning how to, like, feeling empowered to say no, because things weren't right for me. Mm-hmm. Or also just like if someone offered to do something or said like, can I do, you know, and saying no to that, saying no to good intentions, which can be very hard because you just want to say yes to make everybody.
Totally.
So I still struggle with speaking up for myself in that way, but it has.
Can I ask, how does that manifest as a parent?
You mean saying no to my kids?
Saying no to your kids, or, and not even, like, I don't even necessarily think boundaries should be equated with saying no.
That's a good point. Yeah, it could be equated with saying yes.
Yeah, like, you know, I'm just curious, like, how you set boundaries with other parents.
Oh, what interesting questions, Dory.
Oh, thank you.
How do I set boundaries with other parents? Gosh, I don't know. I don't know if I have a good answer to that yet. I mean, I think what I do try to do is teach my kids, you know, like thoughts about consent and physical boundary, like personal space and respect, and, you know, that they have the right to say no. I don't know if this is exactly what you're asking, but like I do try to validate my kids' feelings while also saying like, you can totally be angry at me and your feeling of anger is okay, but this is my decision.
Yeah.
I mean, this is not really boundary setting per se, but I think I do think giving people permission to feel things, but also to know like where the line is.
That's the hard part, right?
It's really hard. Yeah. And that's a very hard part about parenting. In terms of with other parents, I just think communicating honestly is the key.
Yeah.
you know, this is again, maybe not boundary setting, but I with other parents, I always ask if there's a weapon in the home.
Mm-hmm.
And I now also offer that information up to anybody coming to my house.
Mm.
Because for me, I'm not comfortable having my kids go to a home where a gun is not properly locked, the yeah. ammunition locked separately. Like, and learning how to speak up about that was scary.
Yeah, I can imagine.
It was really scary. But now one way I've kind of get around it is I'm like, we'd love to have a play date. You know, we can go to your house or you're welcome here. Just so you know, we don't have any guns in the home. We have a dog. You know, I just include it with like the list of things.
Yeah.
And every time I've done that or every time I've asked, people have been really receptive and it opens a really great conversation. I think it's really important to know, you know, where your kids are going and totally. What's going on in the home and to establish what's important for you. And if like totally. Somebody does have a gun in the home that's not safely stored, you know, like let's meet at the playground.
Yeah.
Anyway, I don't know. Is that a boundary?
Yeah, kind of. That's a boundary. Yeah,
I guess so. So anyway, and Moms Demand Action has great tools. Mm. If anybody's curious about how to have that conversation with other parents, but also like, what are people's kids allowed to do versus what your kids are allowed to do?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. There's a lot of that. Oh gosh, that's hard.
You know what is a great show that is, I think, so good about capturing the struggle to set boundaries is Better Things.
Dory, I haven't watched it.
Oh my God. Kate, I'm so Lane sorry. Just sighed also. And Lane, I'm with you.
Look, there's a lot of shows that I have to watch.
I know, but
I love.
You really need to watch this one. I rarely do this, Kate.
Oh my gosh, okay.
But I'm giving you an assignment.
Well, then I'm going to give you an assignment, okay. Dory.
What is it?
Oh, I don't know. Watch Schitt's Creek, okay?
I tried.
That's not fair. If I have to watch Better Things, you have to watch Schitt's Creek. You have to. I will watch it. I've been meaning to. It's just on the list.
It's just so fascinating because Pamela Adlon's character, like, she kind of has no boundaries. And the show is about how she, I think the show is a lot about how she struggles with that in a lot of her relationships. But then, like, every so often, she, like, her boundaries do come out. I don't know. It's really interesting. And it's like, her relationship with her mom is fascinating. Her relationship with her kids is, like, insane. Like, I don't know. It's so good. Please watch it.
I think one thing that's hard about boundaries, and I would love to kind of hear what your experiences have been, is, like, the feeling of obligation. Like, oh, well, this person's yes. my friend of 20 years, or my mom, yes. or whatnot. And that can kind of cloud our decision making when it comes to setting these relationship boundaries with people. And that's yes. really tricky.
And it's that fine line we were talking about before where it's like, when are you setting a boundary and when are you just being an asshole?
Well, I don't know if this has come up on the podcast, but one thing I've talked about with friends is like people who cancel plans because of like self-care.
Yes.
Yes.
This came up in the Facebook group recently, yeah. actually.
And like, when is that totally understandable? And yeah. when are you just flaking out and using your self-care? You know, like, I don't know the answer.
I don't either.
What has been your experience as a boundary setter?
Well, you know, when I was thinking about this, I was thinking that I feel like I have sometimes historically been like too good at setting boundaries. And what I mean by that is like, sometimes I think I put up walls.
Interesting.
And then that ends up shutting people out too quickly.
Are you protecting yourself?
I think so. And I've actually tried to like let some of my boundaries down.
Ooh, okay. How have you mm-hmm. done that? What have been the steps you've taken?
Just kind of like trying not to have so many like hard and fast rules about things.
Is it kind of like you dismiss the possibility of a relationship with somebody, whether it's, you know, friendship or romantic or whatever, like if they don't meet certain
I think that's part of it. Yeah, I think that's part of it. And I think it's also like how I interact with them and what I will like tolerate.
Ooh.
You know?
Where do you think this stems? Is this how you've always been your whole life?
I think so. You know, it's like, because when I was really thinking about this, I was like, huh. But I think lately, like in the last few years, I've tried to kind of like modify that and be more open and be more forgiving of people. I think part of the problem with having like hard and fast boundaries is that when someone violates the boundary, it's easy to be like, oh, I'm done with this person.
Right. Like, you're out.
You're out. Yep. You violated my boundary. And like, sometimes you do need to say that.
Yes.
Depending on what the boundary is. But other times it's like, well, maybe you don't, you know? So I'm like, I feel like that's a process for me.
Are you thinking about any steps as a parent that you might be taking?
Yeah. I mean, it's funny. Like, I feel like one of my pre-birth boundaries has been, I've been really obsessed with the safe sleep stuff. And that is like a boundary that I'm not willing to cross right now. Or I think, you know, I say right now, but I mean, like, that's not a boundary I'm willing to cross. Meaning,
like, anyone who is caring for your child.
Takes care of my child has to abide by these rules. And like, I didn't buy a rock and play. I didn't buy a swing. I didn't buy a dock-a-tot. I didn't buy any of these things that are actually not safe for people to sleep, for babies to sleep in, that people put their babies to sleep in all the time. I'm not bed sharing. Like, I'm just not going to do that stuff. Like, that is a boundary I've set. And I've talked about it more on my other podcast and gotten some like really interesting pushback about it. But like, that's just where I'm at. Like, that's what I'm going to do, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that is a boundary that, like, if you violate that boundary, then we're done. But there are other types of boundaries that, like, are probably should be more malleable.
Totally. And that's also the safety and well-being of your child.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I get that. Have you ever cut a toxic friend out of your life?
Oh, yeah. I've talked about this on the podcast before. But there have been two toxic friends that I've like fully cut out of my life. And with both of them, I actually feel like I gave, like, it took a lot for me to fully cut them out of my life. Like, I feel like they had to do a lot of things. And then it finally got to a point where it was like, okay, I can't do this anymore.
I
think that both of those were examples of like, I didn't know that that was my boundary. You know what I mean? I didn't know that that was my limit when they pushed me to it.
And then you hit it.
And then I hit it and I was like, I cannot be friends with this person anymore. Whereas sometimes like you just know you have things, you know?
Mm-hmm. You know, the one time that really happened, I really kind of feel sad about how I handled it. I didn't handle it well.
Mm.
I wasn't honest with what was going on because I was scared of the confrontation. And I think now if I were in that same situation, I would have had an honest discussion with the person about it and tried to come to some sort of resolution, whether it meant our friendship ending or not. But I regret how I handled it. Also, it was the best. Regardless, it was the best thing for my mental health to end that relationship. But I don't like how I did it. I was very young. I was like 22.
Okay.
So that can be very, very, like, that's a really challenging thing to do. And understanding what the terms of a boundaries of a friendship.
Yeah. And especially about the boundaries of a friendship that end abruptly because of like one thing, not just like
right,
a gradual fade out because you just have like moved in different directions.
Right. Right.
You know, I don't know.
To be continued, I think.
Oh, definitely.
I
actually think our guest today is like she has some interesting thoughts on this topic too.
Oh, yes.
So, all right, we're going to take a quick break and then we are going to get to our wonderful guest.
Our guest today is Jen Sincero. Jen, welcome to Forever 35.
Thanks for having me.
I'm so excited you're here. Before we get started, I would like to read a quick bio to tell everybody who you are, as if they don't already know. Jen Sincero is a best-selling author, success coach, and a motivational speaker who spent more than a decade traveling the world, helping people transform their lives and their bank accounts via her public appearances, private sessions, coaching seminars, and books, including the New York Times bestseller, You Are a Badass, How to Stop Doubting Your Greatness and Start Living an Awesome Life. And her latest book, How to Be a Badass Every Day, is available now. So can I ask you to just give us a little bit about your background for listeners who might be hearing your name for the first time? And maybe you could also just tell us what inspired you to actually put pen to paper and write about your own badassery.
Well, I felt like, you know, I'm a writer first and foremost, long before coaching and long before any of this. So when I was desperate to get my act together, I read every self-help book under the sun, and they were all awesome and so helpful. But I was like, where's the curse words? Where's the stories? Where's the irreverence? So in the back of my mind, I was like, I can't wait to write my own book about this stuff, because I really felt like a new voice could be used in that genre. And also, I was so snarky about it and so holier than thou, and so just like, this stuff is so woo-woo and stupid, that I wanted to write a book for people who felt the same way and sort of make it a little more palatable by putting curse words in it.
Curse words make everything way more digestible.
Totally.
Absolutely.
And where were you in the space when you were reading self-help books? What was going on in your life that showed you that you needed them?
Well, thank you for asking. I was living in a garage. I was driving a car with no grill. I was so broke. I was in my 40s. I was really subscribing to the belief that I had a lifetime of proof that I couldn't make money. You know, can't make money as a freelance writer. You can't, you know, the economy sucks. And I just honestly got really sick of it. First of all, it's really boring being broke. And secondly, I was like, really, Jen, you're in your 40s and this is the best you can do with your only one and only life on planet Earth? So I just, it was kind of like an aha moment. I just woke up and was like, okay, I am done and I'm doing whatever it takes.
Wow. And it worked.
I know. And so the fact that it worked, I truly felt like if my broke ass can do this, I can totally... Anybody can do it. You know, I really believe that, because I was strongly mired in my money story. And so I really believe that I wanted to share it, because I was just like, look, this is a miracle. You guys can do it too.
Well, you've written a whole book about unapologetically like wanting and earning wealth. And I was curious, why do you think so many people, especially women, feel kind of uncomfortable expressing their desire to make and have money?
Because money is the most loaded topic on planet Earth. I wrote a sex book many, many years ago, and I can tell you, sex doesn't hold a candle to money as far as freaking people out and shame and thou shalt not. And it's amazing, you know, and writing that book was so interesting and so much fun, because nobody really thinks about it. Like, we all in our conscious minds are like, hell yeah, I'd love to make a ton of money. But, you know, deep down, we think rich people are pigs. We equate the desire for wealth with greed. We've got all this nasty, nasty stuff around it. And until you shift that focus and start looking at all the wonderful things that money does for us every day, you're probably not going to let yourself make much of it.
Do you feel financially comfortable now? Or is that something that is hard to kind of access for you?
Nope. I mean, it's not hard to access. Yeah. I feel great.
Great.
That's awesome. That's because that seems like a lot of times our insecurities about money that often are born as children linger. Even
no matter how much money we have.
No, I know. And so that's why I'm so excited to tell people to go shout it on the mountain, because it was my biggest story and I got over it. And so it's possible to change. You can teach an old dog new tricks, people.
What is the biggest tip you give readers about wealth or money?
Get clear on what your shit is around it. Whether you think, you know, that rich people are evil, whether you think you'll be judged if you make money, whether you think you really can't do it. You know, I had this weird subconscious belief that people who made money were almost another species. Like, I'd see somebody with a private jet and I'd be like, that doesn't even enter into my scope of reality. Not that I even really wanted a private jet, but it just was like, what? That's like an alien creature to me, somebody who has that kind of money. Mm-hmm. So I really put myself in a different camp of the can't haves. Without realizing it. So get clear on what your issues are, because then you can start facing them and questioning them and rewriting them.
Jen, can we talk a little bit about going to the spiritual gym?
Yes, we can.
Because I love this.
Very important.
I love this phrase, and I love the things you list as, you know, what an actual spiritual workout is. And so I would love to just have you, you know, tell our listeners about what that looks like, what it looks like for you personally, and then also, like, how can we actually make these spiritual workouts a regular practice and not like something we do once a month?
Right. Yeah. Well, I call it the spiritual gym because it's very much like the physical gym, where if you want to be strong and in shape, you have to constantly work out. You just can't half-ass it, and you can't get in shape and stop, you know? So this really is what You Are a Badass Every Day is all about. It's sort of a your personal trainer, if you will. And, you know, the spiritual gym includes meditating, reading self-help books, having a mastermind partner, hiring a coach, listening to music that pumps you up, exercising. You know, what is it that makes you feel like you're invincible, and making that a daily practice? And I mean, it can be 10 minutes. And I honestly think that is the key to keep going, is don't make it a 2-hour thing that you're like, oh man, I gotta go do, on top of all the things I gotta do, this is another one. So keep it doable, keep it small, but you've got to do it every day. That is the key.
What is a mastermind partner?
A mastermind partner is somebody who you meet with weekly or whatever you decide, who keeps you, it's an accountability partner. And somebody who's, you know, who's hopefully in a better shape than you, but who at least is, it can't be one of your sad sack friends who whines and complains. It's got to be somebody who's investing money in their growth, who's investing time in their growth, who's really doing the work. And you guys keep each other accountable. You bounce ideas off each other. You really support each other. It's really, really helpful.
So we get a lot of emails from listeners about struggles with perfectionism, fear of failure. And I there was a quote in your new book where you just said on page 59, start seeing your low points and temporary failures as starting points, which I thought was so helpful, even just for me, for reframing my own narrative about failure. What do you tell people who are looking for help accepting and embracing failure in their own lives?
First of all, you tried, you got in the game. So that's a hell of a lot more than most people can say who bitch and moan about changing their lives. And also, now you have some information. Getting in the game, because the thing is, when you decide to create something new, you don't know what that new space is like yet, because you haven't done it yet. So you can mull it around in your brain forever, but you honestly don't really know, because you've never been there. So when you get in the game and fail, then you have information, and you know what worked and you know what didn't work, and then you can take a new, more informed step. It's everything. It is so, so important.
I need to try that, Tori. Okay. I've been reading through your book, and it's like, oh God, there's so much shit I gotta do. And it doesn't feel overwhelming, but it's like, come on, Kate, like get it. You know, I'm curious if that's how you were feeling before you set out to write this, when you changed your life. Sounds like your aha moment shifted everything.
It did, because while I did have a lot of stuff to do, I was hell bent to change it. So I stress a lot too, is focus on the end result. I was so sick and tired of the old life, but so lit up by the new one. Like, I'm going to do it. I'm going to prove to myself that I can create whatever kind of life I damn well please. And so I was so turned on by that idea that I was all about it. So, you know, all the stuff that I had to do, I was like, bring it, because I will do it.
What did that life look like? What kind of life were you envisioning at the time?
Very, very bloodshot. Oh, I think for me, first of all, definitely getting out of credit card debt. Mm-hmm. I wanted to feel like I wanted to feel like I could create it was more of an excitement about being a creator instead of a settler for what I could get. You know what I mean? Like, it was more about this feeling of empowerment that I was really turned on by. So that was just a feeling that I had. But also, like, I really needed a new car. And I put that story about buying my Audi and You Are a Badass. And it's saying, you know, for whatever it's worth, I love to drive. I'd never had a new car, let alone a new luxury car. And that symbolized for me, like, all right, this is the symbol of me getting my act together financially, is I'm going to get that damn car and I'm going to pay it off real fast. And I did. And so, it was just about this constant being like, what is exciting to me? And that's what I'm going for. I'm not going for what I think I can get.
I was just going to ask, did your relationships with your friends and family change as you
totally
kind of evolved into a badass?
Yeah. I mean, first of all, a lot of my close friends were on cult watch. They're like, oh my God, she's reading all these.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Oh yeah. They were all just like, what seminar are you going to in Las Vegas? Like, who are you? No, I was, you know, a punk rocker. I was really cool. It was very important to me, those things. But then what became more important to me was not being a broke ass sucker. So I was like, okay, I am not cool at all. I have a name tag on. I'm in Las Vegas at like a Millionaire Mind seminar. Like, you could not shoot and drag me to one of those before then, but I was on a mission. So I would love to say I didn't care what anybody thought of me. I did, and it was embarrassing, and I did lose friends over it too. But more importantly to me was this, I'm really serious as a heart attack about this, and that's what I'm going to focus on. And if you can't hang with that, see you later.
So Jen, I have a friend, my friend Ashley, who actually turned me onto your book a couple of years ago and swears by all your books, but I think You Are a Badass in particular really changed her life. I asked her if she had any questions for you, and I thought she brought up a good one, and that is this. Is there any advice you have or guidance for getting back on the horse? So let's say you've been like rocking out your badassery, and then all of a sudden you have a misstep or a fall, or you go back into like a depressive episode or whatever it is. How do you handle it when you struggle with getting back to something that you know is good for you and you know helps you, but it just still feels so hard to start again?
Well, I think it's important to honor those feelings. And really, I think having the temper tantrum and the pity party and all that is really important, because we are emotional creatures. And me, you know, this whole thing about think positive thoughts, and I'm a big believer in positive thoughts, but you don't have to do them all the time. Stuff sucks. Things fail. You know, pain happens. So let that happen. And then when you get back on the horse, go to the spiritual gym. Surround yourself with the people who inspire you. Do things that make you feel good. Place your focus on success instead of all the reasons why not. Like, I remember when I started doing this stuff, I was like, come on, what's the real? There's got to be something really hard and mysterious, and it isn't. And that's why we're always screaming and yelling in the self-help world about like, watch your thoughts, beliefs, and words, you know, surround yourself with people. That's it, guys, because your mindset completely dictates the actions that you take. So if you are being a ninja about watching your thoughts, beliefs, and words, instead of whining and complaining about, I fucked it up, I'm never going to succeed at this, it's hard, I'm tired, blah, blah. And instead you focus your thoughts, beliefs, and words on the excitement about it and that you can do it and the specifics of what it's going to look like, your actions will be very different depending on what you're doing.
So what are your own self-care practices? What does it look like when you take care of yourself on a day-to-day basis?
Being outside. I love walking around in nature, especially with my dog. Being with the people I love, laughing a lot is a big part of it for me. I love taking a nap. I'm actually renovating my house, and I'm making it so that if you have to take an emergency nap at any time, that is available to you, because all of my couches have chaise lounges on them. And
oh my God.
Wait a second.
Yeah.
That is a dream.
Yeah. It's a dream, right? This is what 50 looks like. These are my goals as now that I'm over 50. I'm like, even if you're in the yard, I have a queen size bed that is a chaise lounge outside.
Wait, that is
goals.
That is
right?
True luxury.
Yes. Thank you. I'm really into it.
We had a listener reach out to us recently who asked us, you know, she was 41 and she hadn't had that like aha moment when you turn 40 and like you stop caring what other people think and you are suddenly super comfortable in your own skin. Did you have that moment for yourself? And what did it take, and did it align with the writing of your first book?
Oh,
your
no.
first badass book, rather.
No, I mean, honestly, 50 was glorious. And I'm not going to pretend that I don't care at all now that I've reached the almighty 50. But I think age, you know what? It's exhausting giving a crap what everybody thinks. And I just think you get, my father said, he's Italian, has a really thick accent. He's like, I don't know if you get older and wiser or older and just more tired. And I'm like, exactly. Like, I don't have the energy, people. Like, it's, it's a finite thing, and I'm going to spend it on picking out a really good couch instead of worrying about what you think about my nap couch.
Nap couches.
Nap couches, right? All over the house and in the backyard.
I know. I'm just like envisioning.
Yeah.
Envisioning
it's
nap
a party
couches.
Over here. It is a party.
But that's fun. It's fun that you've worked in just the ability to rest.
Yeah.
Into all the features of your home, because that's so often like where we, one spot we kind of neglect. Like it's like if we want to accomplish all these things, we have to do it on 4 hours of sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah. This emphasis on like productivity.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, I'm not going to lie. When I write my books under extreme pressure and I wait until the last minute and I crank them out in a month and I don't sleep and the nap couch is not being utilized. But my balance is I'm a sprint runner, so I kick some serious butt and then I go backpacking for a month and don't bring a phone or a computer or anything. And that's how I balance. So I know myself pretty well at this point.
Wow. That sounds, what is that experience like backpacking? Did you say alone for a month with no phone?
No. Okay. No, I have a terrible sense of direction, so I don't even take a walk alone.
But you go out into nature, you leave the phone, leave the computer, and just kind of resettle your brain.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. It's my favorite thing.
I'm coming to you. I'm going on a hike and I'm going on the nap couch when I'm
right. It's pretty damn good.
Jen, where do you kind of see the next phase of You Are a Badass going? Is there another area you want to explore with this? Is there something that you're currently exploring?
As far as the Badass brand goes, I've got a bunch of ideas. I mean, I just published You Are a Badass Every Day a couple months ago. Yeah. I just finished it. So I'm sort of giving it some air. And believe me, it's like an armadillo in your gut. Like when a book decides it needs to be written, you're like, fine, I'll write you. So I'm waiting for the armadillo to wake up. And in the meantime, I'm actually writing some straight ahead comedy. I'm collaborating with some of my dearest, dearest friends who are also writers. And we are having a hoot of a time.
That
so
sounds awesome.
Oh, that sounds great.
In You Are a Badass, you basically end every chapter with the tip of love yourself. And it becomes this like very poignant and clear message the further you keep reading. Is this, in your opinion, like the key to all success? And my second question on this is, why the hell is it so frickin' hard to love yourself?
I don't know. I think that's at the basis of everything, because if you don't love yourself, if you don't believe you deserve what you desire, if you think you should be ashamed of what you desire or who you are or whatever, that colors every single thing you do, right? So I think everything stems from that place of, you know, people are always like, what is a badass? Like, what's your definition? And I say it's somebody who gives themselves permission to be, do, and have whatever they desire. And that permission piece is enormous, because after being a coach for over 10 years, I really feel like my main job was just being like, you're allowed, go do it. And so the love yourself piece is huge, because that is the thing that really stands in our way the most, is that we don't deserve to have a voice. We don't deserve to be big. We don't deserve to be who we are, you know? And so, and why is it so hard? I don't know. We live in a fear-based society, and we just learn how to not love our little bunny rabbit selves. It's really a shame. But we can do it, so it's not that big a shame. Like, you can absolutely do it, but...
There we go.
Yeah, sorry.
No,
took
no.
A little dip there. Yes.
No. But it's the truth. It's the truth. It is really hard, and it's like, you know, it's kind of like the constant journey is coming back to just truly loving yourself. It's a struggle.
Yeah. It is, and that's why the spiritual gym is so important. So I know the gym. You can't get away from the gym, ladies.
No, we're going to work out every day on our spiritual selves. Who are your, when you go to your own spiritual gym, what are you picking up these days?
Oh, gosh. Well, honestly, I am obsessed with home renovation. So it's a lot of design books and websites, because that's really what I get to do now, because I'm done with my book. I'm off tour, and that's what I'm doing. But I also, in the world of self-helpery, I love the writing of Byron Katie and Louise Hay and Deepak Chopra, all the old school people. I love listening to Abraham Hicks. I think that woman, Esther Hicks, is a genius.
Oh, yeah.
I actually list at the bottom of my web. If you go to jensincero.com, at the bottom, there's a resource tab where I just list off all the books that really helped me back in the day. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, we'll go there and then we'll go watch some HGTV.
Okay.
Jen, this has been so wonderful to get to talk to you. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Oh, likewise. Thank you so much. This is great.
And enjoy your nap today. Hope you get one.
I can't wait. Thank you.
Thanks, Jen. Take care.
Okay. Bye. Yeah, you too. Bye-bye.
It shouldn't be so hard or expensive to find furniture that exudes elegance, sophistication, and a touch of luxury. And we're happy to say that today's sponsor, Article, makes getting quality furniture as easy as checking the pieces out online. Thanks to their online-only model, they have some really great manageable prices. Article believes in delightful design for every home, so you can get to creating a space that truly reflects your personal style. I now have a space that is quite outfitted in Article, and I have to tell you how not just like seamless, but truly enjoyable the ordering and shipping process was. It was extremely fast. It's affordable, very convenient because I got to pick the delivery time and they sent me updates every step of the way. It was like they knew that I was an obsessive checker on shipping and they were like, we see you, we honor you, and we're going to support that journey for you. As Dory knows, I have a beautiful bench from Article right when you enter my home. I have some gorgeous planters, and then my favorite, my kind of like surprise favorite piece from Article are the blankets I have gotten for my sofa that my family all hogs. Including my dogs. My dogs love these blankets so they're like throws on our couch. The dogs try to monopolize them.
Dogs are such blanket hogs.
They know a soft blanket when they see one, I gotta say. So their endorsement, honestly, their endorsement says more than mine ever could. That's how soft these blankets are. Article has all kind of curated furniture from mid-century modern or coastal to industrial, Scandi, boho. So no matter what style you're leaning toward, they have got something for you. I mean, you could really do like every room in your house in a different kind of style if you wanted to. And with Article's team of designers, no matter what piece or how many, you're sure to find the perfect balance between style, quality, and price. Article is offering Forever 35 listeners $50 off your first purchase of $100 or more. To claim it, visit article.com/forever, and the discount will be automatically applied at checkout. That's article.com/forever for $50 off your first purchase of $100 or more.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
So, Kate, how did finding your footing go?
It's still a work in progress.
Okay. I mean, you didn't solve it all in 1 week?
Shocking, right? I have found I've had a harder time like going to bed. I just let myself stay up later. Not to bring up Schitt's Creek again. But like I definitely
waited. This is actually becoming a Schitt's Creek podcast.
Oh my God. Do you think one exists?
Kate, I don't know.
Okay.
I mean, if not, you're the super fan.
If not, I'm going to start one.
Okay.
I mean, maybe in my spare time. Anyway, the point being, I definitely stayed up till 1 a.m. watching the latest episode the other night. Like it like dropped onto my iTunes at 12:20 in the morning. I like literally waited. So, you know, I'm not doing the best job like getting into bed, but I am doing a little bit. Like, for example, I bought like 6 peppers from the store and then I chopped them all up, put them into a big thing so that like for dinner or snack or whatever, I just like open this box of peppers and hand it to my kids, or if I'm doing their lunch prep, like I'm trying to do little shortcuts like that. So I'm getting there. I do my make sure my coffee is on a timer so it clicks on in the morning. So I'm doing little tiny things just to make life a wee bit easier. And I'm also like just being nice to myself. And like if our house is a mess or if we are late on something, you know, if we don't have the book ready for the library when the day it's due, like, all right.
Yeah.
No sweat.
It's fine.
Anyway, tell me about packing your hospital bag.
Well, I've started packing it.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. And I did text my friend who recently had a baby, and I was like, I have a really dumb question, but when people talk about packing their hospital bag,
I love where this is going.
What do they mean exactly?
Like, did you pull out your biggest travel suitcase?
Right. Like, is it a suitcase on spinner wheels? Is it a backpack? Is it a tote bag?
Mine was a tote bag.
Is it a garbage bag? Like, what is it?
I mean, it's whatever you want, honestly.
That's kind of what she said. She said she and her husband brought 3 backpacks.
Like they were trekking.
Like, yeah. I was like, all right. So I actually have this big old, remember Mary Mecco for Target? Remember when they did that?
Yes.
I have a big tote bag that I usually bring to the beach.
Perfect.
And I was like, okay, this can be my foundational bag. I don't know why, but there's something that feels weird to me about like rolling into Cedars with a suitcase.
I had the same thought. But again, Kim Kardashian gave birth there.
Also, like who anything. Cares?
I know, who cares? I liked bringing my, if you have a breastfeeding pillow or if you're planning on breastfeeding.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Bringing that.
I have a My Breast Friend.
Yeah, like bring some of your accoutrement, bring your own pillow.
Yeah.
Bring an extra blanket. You know, a friend whose name rhymes with Mate Menser could also come to your house and grab stuff and bring it over for you and your husband.
It's not ringing a bell.
Okay. Their name rhymes with Date Denser.
Oh,
it's me.
Okay.
It's me.
All right. Cool.
That was it. The D.
Okay. Yeah.
But like, you know, so you and your husband don't have to be, well, you would be there, but you know, we can help both of you.
Thank you. I appreciate
that. You have a million friends who want to do stuff like that for you. We've got you.
Thanks.
We're going to hold you up.
Oh,
and then you'll have to set boundaries when we don't leave your hospital room.
Someone called into our other podcast and pointed out that because we live in Los Angeles and we drive everywhere, like you can overpack and leave stuff in the car.
Oh, that's a great idea.
And I was like, oh my God, of course. Like,
I thought about that.
I know, I hadn't thought about that.
I definitely took a taxi to my first child.
Right, because you lived in New York.
Yeah.
So that is not an option there. But here I was like, oh yeah.
Great idea.
I can bring whatever I want.
You can bring that giant.
I have an SUV.
Yeah, pack it up. Put your whole bed in there.
Ooh. Yeah. What are you working on this week?
Well, I had a thought yesterday, and this circles back to like an old intention you had, which was old road rage.
Oh,
I have it
rage.
Bad. I'm a real jerk when I drive.
I don't know if I believe you.
Well, you were driving behind me yesterday.
Yeah.
And I was like purposely trying to be a good driver so you wouldn't see what a monster I am on the road. I was like, well, Doria can see me, so I've got to be a better driver.
So you didn't roll down your window and give someone the finger?
I do do that.
Gratuitously.
I do.
I drive like this.
Doria's miming, sticking your...
Just driving
giving
with
people
your
the finger.
Sticking out the window.
I do a lot of yelling. I do a lot of swearing. I do give people the finger a lot. I honk sometimes, like if someone... is just also I do get really aggravated because here in Los Angeles, and maybe this is how it is across the world, people are sitting on their freaking phones instead of driving.
Totally. If you are stopped at a light and you look to your left and your right,
everyone's
on their phone,
and that's dangerous and illegal if you're holding it. So,
and you can get a very expensive ticket for it.
You can. So I get angry. So I do honk, like we're at a light and it turns green and the person in front of me doesn't move for 5 seconds. I lay on the horn.
In those situations, I give a little tap on the horn just to like,
I don't do like, hey. I don't do like a 10 second honk. Yeah. I don't like elbow it, but I just get very frustrated very easily. And sometimes it's justified, but most of the time it's not.
Mm.
And I would love to learn how to just like maintain my calm because there's nothing you can do about it.
May I recommend the classical music station KUSC?
You can, and I'm gonna have to try it out.
And I think you have satellite radio, right?
Yes.
So there's a classical station. I've
got
on
access
there.
To all sorts of tunes. Yeah. So that's kind of what came up for me this week. How about you?
I have road rage too. I haven't gotten it completely in check, and I find that I have more road rage when
someone is driving what I've defined as an obnoxious car.
Oh, well, yes, because they
drive obnoxiously.
Yes.
Like, I'm like, fuck you.
And here in California, the cars on the road are kind of bonkers. Like, I never had seen a Maserati in my life.
I was just thinking.
A Maserati? Yes. And you see them all over here.
Yeah.
Like, in the most ridiculous places. So,
yeah.
It's a little wacky here on the road. But also, you know, I find, and then I'll stop talking about this, but part of my road rage is my anger at people who are driving unsafely and the possibility that they could hurt my kids.
Yes. That is legit.
Furious. But then it scares my kid. Like, then my kids will be like, what was that? Was that person being a bad driver? And then I'm like making them critical. I don't know. Well,
one thing that I have tried to stop doing, and I've not totally succeeded, but I've tried, is giving people the finger, because I am nervous about what they are capable of.
Totally. That someone could actually hurt you.
Totally.
And I've also had moments where people have given me the finger and I was just making an honest mistake or like got flustered.
Right.
And then it hurts my feelings. So yeah. I do. Or like I was just having a bad day.
Yeah.
So I do try to be conscious of the fact that, like, who knows what kind of stuff people in other cars are dealing with. You know, like sometimes we do make honest, stupid mistakes while driving.
But I think, like, I would rather get upset at, like, with my, like, be like, ugh, fuck you, dude. But like say it to myself.
Right. And not.
And instead of, you know, honking the horn really loudly or giving someone the finger. You know what I mean? Just like.
Well, and also being in a car, it's like akin to leaving an internet comment.
Yes.
Because you're like protected in a bubble. Like I would never walk up to somebody and give them the finger and start screaming at them. But I definitely do it from the safety of my car.
Yes.
And as you said, that's not. Someone could commit some sort of violent act against you. So anyway, gonna work on that.
Okay.
That was a lot, but I'm with you.
It's a big issue.
Yeah, I was really like crazy in my car yesterday and I gotta chill out. How about you?
Well, Kate, we are sitting in my home right now.
Very clean, very fresh.
Well, that's kind of you to say, but
I think it is.
As I look behind me, there's piles. And there have been piles that have become permanent fixtures.
I know those
piles. Like,
there's
such permanent fixtures that I almost don't even see them anymore.
I know them. I have them, too.
Because they're just a part of the landscape.
Permanent piles.
Permanent piles. And I would like to tackle some of the permanent piles this week.
We did have a moment where we were recording at your house maybe last week. And I think Sammy was here and they, like, accidentally, like, poked a hole, like, touched something. And then it turned out it was, like, a vintage amp. Yeah. From 1960 that was just like in a corner.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of like, I can see this happens in my house too, where it's like some things that are important are piled on top of like school art.
Totally.
Stacks of stuff.
Yeah. So I'd like to start tackling the piles because I think like once the baby comes, it's like all bets are off and no piles will be tackled. So
I feel like an episode dedicated solely to pile work could be interesting.
Sure. I'm down.
Put it on the list.
Okay.
Me. You,
Lane.
Oh boy. Okay, I can't wait. I will say though, like as a person who is in your home a lot over the past year,
yes,
you and your husband have made like incredible organizational changes, and it looks fantastic. And you've done a lot of work from like first your office to now turning that into a nursery.
Thank you, I appreciate
that. So don't forget to recognize how far you've come.
Give myself a pat on the old back.
Well, this has just been a delight.
It has been.
How do we say goodbye in German?
Auf Wiedersehen.
Well, let's do that. We're going to at Wiedersehen you.
Auf Wiedersehen.
As Wieder? I can't.
It's okay.
I apologize to all German-speaking listeners. You know, we have a voicemail. You can always call us at 781-591-0390. And our email is forever35podcast@gmail.com.
You can join our Facebook group at facebook.com/group/forever35podcast. And the password is serums.
And if you like this little show, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, tell a friend, or mention us on social media.
And a reminder that everything we mention on the show is always on our website, forever35podcast.com. And you can follow us on Instagram at forever35podcast and on Twitter at forever35pod.
Forever 35 is hosted and produced by Dori Shafrir and Kate Spencer, and produced and edited by Sammy Junio. And Lane Hammer is our assistant.
Bye, everyone.
Bye. As Wiedersehen. Nope.
Oh, boy.